Okay, so let's start out by just sort of describing what goes on here at the refinery. This, I guess, would be Tresora's only refinery in Hawaii?
Correct.
And how does it compare to other Tesoro refineries? You were mentioning that there were six altogether.
I would say it's one of the smaller ones. The largest ones are in Washington and California. So it's just a smaller one in a niche market.
And when you say a niche in size or niche in products that you make here?
Well, niche in certain, we give certain fuels that only we can make. Like we sell fuel oil to Kalaeloa, and we're the only ones that can meet the spec on sodium and vanadium, potassium that goes over there.
Bunker fuel?
It would be sold as, but it's a low sulfur fuel oil, and it's the same similar to what we sell to Hawaiian Electric. So it's a fuel oil, but it's a low sulfur. Typically, the bunkers is high sulfur.
Okay. My next question was going to be the range of products you make here. So, obviously, this being a refinery, you receive crude oil.
Yes.
And most of that crude, I understand, comes from Southeast Asia.
It comes from all over now. We're getting it from Africa, from Southeast Asia, from South America. We've even had crudes from Russia, Norway. And because we used to get most of our crudes from Alaska North Slope, but that's gradually drying up, so that's caused us to go further away.
Okay. And so you then supply all the needs locally from gasoline to jet fuel?
Yeah, we also supply diesel and, like I said, the fuel oils, the bunkers, propane.
No, okay, propane, that's a good question because we've been running stories about the shortage. Mm-hmm. I guess the shortage had to do with something at the Chevron refinery, not being able to meet the demand or having an equipment problem there.
Right, they couldn't start one of their units up, which is a gasoline and propane producing unit. And we've been trying to cover the shortfall. In fact, we've increased our propane production up to what we can. But it's still not enough for the entire island's demand.
But you were able then to ratchet up your
yes.
your production to capacity, and so okay. And I guess when there were two companies supplying the propane, you didn't need to. You would be making too much if you were making
correct
capacity.
And usually, if the gas company has enough time, they're notified and they can actually import some propane if they know somebody's going to be down, like during a turnaround. But this was unplanned.
Okay. Let's see. Now, we all people may or may not know that on April 2nd, gas stations here are going to have to sell at least 85% of what they sell is going to have to contain 10% ethanol.
Mm-hmm.
How is that process going in getting ready for that?
Essentially, we're pretty much ready. In fact, we'll be producing our first batch of it on Sunday, which will be going out, getting in preparation for the ethanol to be added to it.
Now, you're an engineer, so you might know this. Is there an issue with preparing it too far in advance? Is it volatile or does it break down?
It's just the conversion between conventional. It's just the blending. You make it with different components, and so you gradually have to work the conventional gasoline out and make a different type so that the ethanol can be blended in. So essentially, what we do here at the refinery is we'd actually make a lower octane, slightly lower what they call vapor pressure gasoline. And then when they add the ethanol, that brings the octane up and the vapor pressure in the gasoline up.
Okay, because the end result has to be the same octane level
right.
as people are used to when
right.
their cars are
mm-hmm.
set for. Okay. So that's that's on schedule. So I guess there were plans for some companies to manufacture or make the ethanol here, which is not going to be happening. So you're having to import this ethanol.
Right, which is kind of crazy because, we're importing they're importing ethanol, and then we're exporting the gasoline that would normally go into our local market. So it really hasn't helped in terms of being self-sufficient in terms of Hawaii. We're still bringing in, and now we're We've added another variable, because if the ethanol ship doesn't arrive on time, we could create problems there too, because we'd have this low octane material with nothing to blend up with.
So before you mix the gasoline with the ethanol, you have to change, you have to make a specific type of gasoline
right.
that'll mix with the ethanol to produce your octane level.
Right.
And by itself, that gasoline can't be used.
Right, it's too low octane.
That's true.
That's pretty scary.
Well, I mean, when you're an island and you rely on imports for our ships to bring everything in, that's another variable in the whole equation.
That was one of the reasons we were kind of against it, because it doesn't help the, you know, self-sufficiency of the island. And the whole intent of the law was, you know, to help the basically supply jobs to the islands. And so we were always hoping that before they initiated it, at least they'd have a plant here.
Right. I guess they, there are companies out there that are, they're getting tax credits to do it, and, you know, they're being encouraged to do it. It's just they're not going to be ready for the, the deadline. Now, I don't know if this is something you can comment on, but, the gas, the wholesale price cap for gasoline has been a very, very hot topic in the legislature, and the House has a bill. There's a lot of opponents in the general public and in the legislature itself, and there's a bill that would basically repeal the gas cap, pass the House, went out of its committees, and then passed the full House and is on its way to the Senate. Do you have any sense for this as to, like, whether you think there's enough momentum, you know, with the opposition to have this bill repealed, or the law repealed?
Personally, I don't have a sense, but I know if, you know, people still see the prices rising, that would, you know, put more pressure on the legislation to repeal it.
Yeah. We get a lot of letters to the editor to that effect, you know, they're like, well, you said this would bring the prices down or make them comparable to the mainland, but the gap is even widening.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that gets reported is your gross refining margins, which we had a story not too long ago saying they've improved. Is there anything behind that? Anything in particular that's improving the refining margins?
Really, it's just the balance between, you know, supply and demand is essentially what's driving it. And basically, the oil industry is a world market, and, you know, so we kind of float with the world market. And refining margins have improved across, you know, the country. Everybody had high refinery margins, but there's periods when we lose a lot of money, too, but that's never reported. It's usually when we make money.
Well, I was going to say, that's a public relations challenge to, you know, I guess all the big oil companies have been reporting record profits.
Mm-hmm.
But as the plant manager, that's outside of your, that's not part of your responsibility to try to manage public perceptions of oil companies.
Right. I mean, to me, we're just a business. I mean, when we can make money, we make it, but there's always times when we lose it, and, you know, mostly the press just reports when we're making the big amount of money. But typically, we're a little different than, you know, integrated oil companies, because essentially, the integrated oil companies can get the crude out of the ground. We still have to buy the crude on the open market and then sell it. So where integrated oil refineries can actually lose on the refining side and still make their money on the production side, getting it out of the ground.
Okay. Moving on to sort of your role here at the refinery, you were mentioning that your background is in engineering. At what point did you make the shift to management, and how was it, like, as you say, going from dealing with numbers to having to deal with people? How did that transition go?
Essentially, you know, it's kind of scary at first, and you just have to learn to work with people. And I find as you go along, you learn lessons, you make mistakes, and you learn from them, and you don't repeat them. And what I found is the biggest thing is communications and finding out what people want and listening to them and giving them feedback in a short period of time. you know, helps in terms of addressing a lot of the issues. Because all people basically want is, you know, communications. Most of the problems that occur are because of miscommunications and people not understanding or having the same goal.
Now, how many people are how many people basically do you oversee here at the plant?
There's around 250 people.
Okay. And is that has that been increasing or decreasing, or has that been sort of flat?
It's increased slightly, but it's just very slightly, you know, not significantly over the last, I would say, 3 or 4 years.
Okay. That pretty much covers it. Did you, let's get back to the management thing. Did Tesoro send you to, excuse me, do any kind of management training, or is this stuff that you've sort of learned on the fly?
Well, some of it's on the fly, but we have Achieve Global, which we've been doing, and basically all the managers here at the facility are going through this Achieve Global. And
what is that exactly?
Basically, it teaches you, in fact, I got it right over here, it's the 7 basic principles.
Okay.
In terms of, you know, how to deal with people and treating them, you know, basically treating a person like you would want to be treated. And basically listening. And, let me see, I'll bring that.
It's a computer-based training. All of our managers go through that.
Okay.
And it's
okay.
Wrapped around that, but also in line with that, that's a foundation, but they also learn specific skills like listening, giving constructive feedback, building team pride is the one we're on now, the module we're on now. We have one module every quarter. Everybody's required to go. We have our own facilitators, so some of the managers are facilitators. As they learn facilitation skills for this class, they learn how to facilitate meetings, yeah, group projects. So we have some pretty good training, and they plan on, our corporate office just announced they're planning on having more intensified training.
And you mentioned it earlier about the difference between working with numbers and people, and then also you just mentioned the part about you think the communication element's very important, mm-hmm, but at this stage, you've had a lot of experience in managing people, but back when you were first making the transition from being a purely numbers person, mm-hmm, to being management, what were some, describe some of those challenges?
Basically, you tend to be more impatient, and when you first become a boss, you think, well, I'm supposed to be boss, I'm supposed to tell them what to do, and if they don't do it, you know, yell at them. Of course, I'm not really a yeller, but I wouldn't have been as patient now as I would have been before, and I wouldn't look at it from the other person's angle. You know, I'd be looking at it from my perspective instead of theirs.
Okay, that would sort of encompass management. And as far as when you're the quote unquote leader of an organization, you have people looking up to you. Do you, mm-hmm, are you aware of that, or is that just something you don't really think about?
No, I'm aware of it, and one of the things I find is in terms of motivation. I think a big thing with leadership is motivation, and you know, trying to say that this job is fun and motivating them to get the thing done. And we've recently come up with what we call Coppola Pride, and we just tried it on the CEO. And it's essentially where he was totally surprised, where we have this clap, you know, give, you know, somebody a name, or, you know, give safety one. Everybody claps. You get 250 people doing that at once. It's pretty impressive.
Where did that idea come from?
Well, actually, it came from our I&E shop. One of the guys was doing it there. And
I&E is for
Instrument and Electrical,
okay,
shop. And so I took it, and we said, we'll start doing it in the management team. And from the management team, it went out to the area. So we start this on with every meeting, you know, do this Coppola Pride. Give one for Tesoro, give one for yourself, give one for safety, teamwork. And it's, you know, really motivates people and gets them going for the day. It's fun.
Is there any way to, is productivity something you can measure, or is it just something you sort of get a feel for that we seem to be getting more, or people seem to be putting more into their work.
Well, we have what we call a scorecard here at the refinery where we monitor safety, environmental, giveaway on products, throughput rates, all that as a function of people. And so you can tell improvement just by the scorecard. It'll show improvements. And we have been seeing that. Okay. Safety is a big thing. I mean, when people aren't happy, you know, they when they do get hurt, they don't come to work like they should. You know, if they're motivated, they'll say, hey, I can come back to work. If they're not, they'll prolong the injury. Or, you know, if they have a minor injury, they won't show up. Because
have there ever, I mean, refining oil, I mean, it could be, you know, there's refineries have fires and explosions and things like that. What's the record like here as far as serious types of situations like that?
We've never had a fatality, and I think the last one I remember was back in the early 80s. We haven't had any serious incidents since the early 80s. I think there was somebody that hydrogen had come out of some metal, you know, and a guy was welding on it, and it blew him probably 3 or 4 feet in the air, and he was off for a while. But that was kind of before my time, even. Mm-hmm. And I've been here 25 years.
Okay. So, I mean, yeah, a lot of managers or leaders, let's say, dealing with accounting you know, professions like that, a serious mistake, I guess, maybe could lead to a lawsuit from your clients. But, I mean, the attention to detail and attention to, you know, the safety issues here is a big, important thing.
Major.
Yes. Yeah, you really have to have awareness.